gather around. I'm glad everybody came out tonight. As we stand on our neighborhood corner, know that this fire that's burning represents the passion you have. Listen. I recognize all of you. Every creed and color. With that being said,
we had
say what?
Now beat that.
Oh, yeah!
Now what we want you all to do is sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. And if you dig it, let me hear your finger snap, y'all.
Now, before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out. Did not come here to impress you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone. And I don't care what you think about me. But just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Okay, I'll reload it.
From the sports bars to the stands, we are the voice of the fans. You are now plugged into your sports mixtape. This is the Section 357 show, and we are presenting to you the Ball Street Journal. We are your Ball Street Journal reporters, D, Ron, Trey, and myself, Floyd. Fellas, how you doing?
Doing absolutely fantastic, as always. Another jam-packed, great show of the Section 357 show. Let me jump right into it by tossing it over to my man, Ronnie. How you doing?
I'm doing great, D. This is the grab bag edition of the Section 357 show. We got to bring back one of our old favorites to talk some NASCAR, some gaming, some drag racing. Probably sneak in a little West Coast hip-hop talk in there as well. Our main man, Brandon, back on the scene. Speaking of the left coast, before we bring him into the conversation, somewhere out there on the Pacific Coast Highway, it's my main man, L.A. Trey. Trey, what's good?
Yo, what is going on, fellas? Four Horsemen back again. Drop some knowledge on the rest of y'all suckers. Happy about this show we got lined up. I mean, what we got here? We got some cars, we got some gaming, we got some good conversation. You know we're going to get in a little bit of an argument and debate. Let's just go ahead and get this thing started.
As usual, you can always check us out and follow us on Twitter at Section 357. Find us also on Podomatic, on iTunes, as well as on Stitcher to subscribe to and download the show. As my co-hosts have mentioned, this is a bit of a grab bag edition, and we had to bring back in one of our favorite guests, man of mystery, writer extraordinaire, Brandon Peters. Brandon, how you doing, man?
I'm good, fellas. No complaints over here. How y'all doing?
Feeling good, feeling great. Always a pleasure to have you on. So let's jump right into this. We had a little bit of a pre-show conversation about some of the topics that we wanted to hit. Let's start off with racing. Recently, you did a piece on drag racing for Complex. And I wanted to follow up with that to get you to talk about the world of drag racing. Maybe we don't pay as much attention to that as NASCAR. So we felt like it was a great time to have this conversation. So let's start right there.
Okay, yeah. I went out to, I had never been to I guess you would call it a sanctioned or official drag race before. So I went out to Pomona for the start of this season of the Mellow Yellow series or whatnot. And I was very impressed. I went out with preconceived notions of what the crowd would be like and what the environment would be like. And it was pretty dope, man. Like, overall, as I think I kind of conveyed in my story, I just think that if you like muscle cars and you like speed, then you'll like an NHRA Top Fuel or Funny Car Race.
All right, so for those of us who may not necessarily be familiar with the sport off the top, what exactly is goes into to a sanctioned drag race compared to, I don't know, an unsanctioned street drag race? Is there and honestly, which do you prefer? Is there a higher element of excitement in one over the other?
I mean, it's essentially the difference between a pickup game at the park and going to see an NBA team play. You know, you have their events where the entire, you know, there's these cars are worth upwards of almost $1 million. So there's a huge difference between that and the guy that just has nitrous in it, or, you know, has a 442 or whatever under the hood. Like, these ladies and gentlemen, because there are women who also do the races, like, these cars are doing 300 some odd miles per hour, high 200 some odd miles per hour over 1,000 feet. Like, that can't be replicated on the street. Like, it's something that you have to actually be there to experience, to understand how fast and how noisy that is. Like, the closest thing to the decibel levels that you'll hear and feel is an airplane taking off. Like, it's insane.
Brandon, as I mentioned earlier, I think a lot of our fans out there are probably more familiar with NASCAR. Or I guess maybe even not. I think NASCAR tends to get a lot more of the love because of the nature of that culture, and I guess the way in which they compete in terms of the oval and going around the track for X amount of miles. But when you're talking about drag racing and that culture, how would you compare those two from a culture standpoint? In terms of what you know about NASCAR versus the drag racing culture?
I think the main difference between NASCAR and NHRA racing or drag racing is the access that fans get to NHRA. Like, the chances of even, you know, the most diehard fan meeting their favorite driver in NASCAR is slim to none. In NHRA, every single ticket is a pit pass. So you had fans out there that, you know, could encounter, could talk to drivers, get autographs from drivers, watch the pit crews do their thing. And it's a lot more, I hate the word diverse because it's such a coded word, but there are a lot more people of color and there are a lot more women involved in NHRA than there is in NASCAR. So it's kind of like it's not so much exclusive, it's more inclusive, and there's still a lot of money involved, there's still a lot of speed involved, but because it's not as big of a sport, I guess, you know, it's easier for fans to interact, and it's just a more chill time, in my opinion, than a NASCAR race.
Brandon, let's kind of keep it right there. You talk about, you know, the diversity of the NHRA scene as opposed to NASCAR. But you also talked about the cars in NHRA being worth as sometimes as much as NASCAR. We talked about $1 million. I'm not really familiar on the price. So what is it about, you think, this sport that does give way to more diversity, more inclusion, where something like NASCAR, is it simply a case of just cultural? Is it simply a case of just the type of sponsors at NASCAR? What kind of leads to this particular racing having more diversity than something like NASCAR?
You know, I would just be kind of, you know, taking a stab at it. I'm not exactly sure why there seems to be, you know, a wider variety of participants in NHRA than it is in NASCAR. From what I've seen, there's more of a shot in NHRA for people to get to the top level. Like, there are a few people that didn't come from money, that didn't have a long time background in racing, that have risen the ranks in NHRA, whether they started in motorcycles, whether they started like in the go-kart scene, whether they started in whatever and work. There are actually guys that have worked up from working on a crew to being drivers. And I'm not sure how often that happens in NASCAR, so that may be some of it. I mean, for example, Antron Brown, who's the only African-American to win a pro racing championship in North America, he race motorcycles and all of that stuff coming up. But he didn't come from a family of pro racers. He didn't come from a lot of money. He just kind of busted his ass and worked his way up. And now, you know, he's one of the bigger guys on the scene.
Brandon, when I ran into you earlier this year in Atlanta, you mentioned, I think you maybe even talked about Mr. Brown earlier. But if you could, besides Antoine Brown, could you give some other names that we should maybe start paying more attention to, or maybe just start following on Twitter to kind of get a better sense of the culture and some of the folks who are really involved in NHRA?
Man, there's so many. I would say where you would want to start is John Force. He's probably like the Babe Ruth or the, you know, Bill Russell of NHRA. The dude has 16 championships. He's an older guy, super just out there personality, really cool dude. And his daughter's race, his son-in-law races, like the Force family racing is insane as far as their depth in the business and their popularity. Like, this guy, wherever he goes, there's legions of fans following him. And he's a big one, as I mentioned earlier. Antoine Brown, Alexis DeJoria, please forgive me if I'm saying her name wrong, who is actually the daughter of Jean-Paul, who owns Paul Mitchell and Patron. She's pretty big out there. Like, those are the three that kind of stick out in my mind as far as personality and just people that I think even pedestrian fans could latch on to as far as drivers, or excuse me, pilots that they want to watch.
Brandon, forgive me. Let me take this back a second. I thought you had a great comment earlier about the importance of being at this drag racing event live. And just talk about more of the ambiance, the sound, being that close to the cars and the racers. The difference between being there live and seeing it on TV and whether or not being at either, you know, drag racing or even NASCAR events could do more to, and I hate to use this term because you hate it, but diversify the fan base of racing.
Yeah, it's one of those things, man. Like, it's as cliche as it sounds, you just have to be there to experience just how loud and how fast those cars are going. You really can't translate 10,000 horsepower and 320 miles per hour on television. Like, it's impossible. You have to see it, you know, with your own eyes to truly not only believe it, but to understand it. As far as NASCAR is concerned, you know, I think it goes either way. You can watch it on TV or you can watch it. I think NASCAR is similar to the NFL experience, where it's almost to the point now where it's almost better to watch it on TV than to watch it live, unless you're a hardcore fan. You know, I love going to games regardless because I'm a fan. I'm a sports dude. But, you know, if I was a pedestrian fan, like, I'd sit back and watch it on TV. But with NHRA, you can't get that. It's just not the same. And also, you know, sitting there watching the races is one thing. Feeling, you know, a peel out or feeling what it is for a car to take off from the starting line and get to 100-something miles per hour in a fraction of a second. You got to feel it. You got to be there to experience it. And when you add on to that, the fact that you can walk around from pit crew to pit crew and check out your favorite drivers, see what they're doing, see crews break down an engine in a matter of minutes and put it back together, like, it's just insane. It's one of those experiences that don't really happen in sports that often. Like, you can't go to an NBA game and just shake LeBron James' hand and get an autograph. Like, you can't go to a baseball game and say what's up to Derek Jeter. Like, it doesn't really happen. But this is a sport where you can do that, from the smaller guys up to, you know, the biggest stars in the sport.
Brandon, first of all, I just wanted to say I think it's pretty cool that you get a chance to do these type of reviews for drag racing. But in case our viewers don't know, you also get an opportunity to actually do some test driving for some other vehicles. And I've always been a little curious as to how that process goes.
Are you set on like a regular track or like a regular racetrack to do some of these test driving, or are you just driving in like the Ralph's parking lot? And do you get a chance to really like, you know, put these cars on the road and give them a real test drive? Like, I mean, are you peeling rubber? Is it more than just pushing buttons? You know, give me the process of how you break in a car so that we know what's really up.
All right, I don't want to get myself in trouble, but it really varies, man. Like, it's like anything else. It's about relationships. Like, I've been reviewing cars for a number of years now, so I have relationships with manufacturers as well as fleet companies to where I can say, hey, I want to check out this car, and they drop it off to me for a week or two or whatnot. Or there are other instances where I went to Key West a couple weeks ago to check out the Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid that they're coming out, which is the first all-wheel drive hybrid in the world. And, you know, with that, you know, I took it off-road. Like, they want you to dog the cars. Like, they want you to see what they can do. So we took it off-road. I'm driving through rain. I'm swerving in and out of traffic and all of that. It really just depends on what kind of car it is. If it's a sports car, I'm going to push it. If it's an SUV, I'm going to see what the capabilities are. Like, I think that's what readers want to know about the cars. Like, if you know, saying what it looks like is cool, the tech is cool, but they can get that anywhere. But I think readers really want to get firsthand experience of, you know, how it is with a car. And honestly, if it's a car that's manufactured and it's not a production car, it's for reviews, they got to destroy them anyway at some point, because they can't be resold. So you might as well get the most out of it that you can.
Well, to use the car metaphor and shift gears in the conversation, let's talk about gaming. Brandon, last time we had you on, we talked about, I think it was Madden at that time, and even the latest FIFA game. Let's go back and revisit that and maybe get your impressions on the latest edition of the FIFA, the 14. So give us your thoughts on that and maybe even some other games that really have impressed you over the past few months.
FIFA, honestly, man, like, with all these next-gen consoles coming out, they would be current-gen now because they're out, Xbox One and PS4, like, with the sports games, like, they're cool. Like, FIFA's good, you know, Madden could have been a little bit better, NBA 2K is pretty good, but I think next year is when we'll really see, or later this year, is when we'll see how ill these games can really be. Like, I enjoy playing FIFA 14. It's a fun play. The new Ignite engine kind of brings the physics to a much more realistic level. I think the main thing with FIFA that was crazy, FIFA 14 for Xbox One and PS4 that was crazy, was not so much the gameplay, which remained good. It's like some of the best gameplay you'll ever have in any sports games. It was actually bringing that football or soccer experience to the game as far as the crowd is concerned and all of that, because that's the main, you know, one of the main things about going to a live match is just the insanity of the crowd, the detail in the crowd, the chants back and forth, just the different things the crowds do at soccer matches that really can't be replicated, or is not replicated in any other sport.
Yeah, gaming. This is in my neck of the woods right here, brother. I don't know if you're nice or not, but I know I am, just for all I can. Shout out to Sintel, Sintell on the PlayStation 4 if you want some. On 2K4, Madden, FIFA, you let me know. Holler at me. I'm your boy. I don't even know if you play Madden Ultimate Team, if you're a mutt player or not. I got some cards you can swap. But I just want to say, take a quick shout out to the throwback, like the old NFL 2K that me and Derek used to play way back in the day, back when Madden used to have competition. And it's looking like NBA 2K is crushing the competition as far as the basketball games are concerned, because EA's was more than lackluster. You know, it was a big disappointment. So I'm just saying, what do you want in a sports game as far as the next generation goes? Do you want it more arcade-ish like a throwback to the old NBA jams or the old NFL blitzes? you want to see more competition, if there's a possibility that EA can let go of that stranglehold of the NFL license agreement players union thing where they've got everything on track. What is it that you want as another fellow gamer from the next generation of sports gaming?
Man, I definitely want more competition, without a doubt. I think it sucks that we only have, you know, one NFL game. We only have one NBA game that matters. No diss to EA, but that game, NBA Live, was terrible after waiting all these years. And the one thing I thought, going back to FIFA 14, that was great was just the animations were kind of seamless. And there was so many animations in the game. And I would like to see more seamless animations when we have 2K15 and Madden 15 and all of that stuff coming out over the next few months. Because the capabilities of these machines is insane. At this point, we're just waiting for the software to catch up. But, you know, I'm not really with the whole arcade thing. I love simulation. Like, I play ball a couple times a week. When I play 2K, you know, I want guys to move like guys move on the court in real life.
Talk about NBA Live, man. We got to shout out the 1993-94 Golden State Warriors from Brandon's hometown with Weber, Sprewell, Mullen, Hardaway, Billy Owens. Maybe the greatest video game basketball team right there. But shifting to the West Coast, Brandon, I know you have a radio show. Heard it recently, Earth the Jerk, Mr. Fab, stopped by the show. Talk to me about sort of the rebirth of the West Coast of late. You've had Schoolboy Q, YG is a big release. The Bay Area sound has become more and more, I want to say mainstream, but you've heard it a lot more incorporated of late. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on the West Coast. There seems to be sort of a mini revival, so to speak, with West Coast hip-hop.
Yeah, appreciate you shouting out the show. Yeah, we do Day One Radio on ABL Radio every ABLRadio.com every Thursday, 10 a.m. and 5 p.m., man. And we had Fab and Irk on the show the other day, but we've also had Problem up there. We've had Bad Luck up there. We've had a lot of West Coast MCs come up. And personally, man, I mean, of course, I'm biased to an extent because I'm from there, but I've been covering this culture for, you know, off and on since like 98, man, probably really 97, 96 when I was in school at Clark Atlanta University. And the West fell off for a long time, man, like after being on for a minute. And I think in the last 3 years, thanks to TDE, thanks to Our Future, thanks to HBK, thanks to the legends and 40 and Snoop and all these guys, the music has just kind of come around to the point to where it's as good or better than anything else anybody's putting out. And beyond that, as you kind of mentioned, the Bay Area sound has been permeating, you know, throughout music in other regions. Like Mustard's beats are essentially mob music beats from the 90s with a 2014 twist, which has gone over to, you know, certain 2 Chainz songs, certain Jeezy songs, certain Drake songs, a lot of the L.A. songs. Like, it's sonically very similar to music that's been working in the Bay, you know, off and on for years. So it's good, man. Like, that's what hip-hop is, man. There was a point where Jay-Z was making music that sounded like he was from L.A. Like, that's just how it's always been. People borrow from other regions that just happen to bounce around to the Bay. I'm just hoping that these Bay Area guys can capitalize on it to the fullest extent. And some of them are. I don't feel like some of them are. But, you know, like you mentioned, Schoolboy's album is crazy. It's a lot of guys out of the Bay Area and out of L.A. right now that are just killing it, not only creatively but also commercially.
Let me take this back a second, and I'm sorry for switching topics on you like this, but I want to go back to the question that Trey asked. Just how do you feel about these, as you said, next-generation consoles? Because I remember tons of sports games, like that old ice hockey that used to be on the very first Nintendo
where you just had like the short guy, the short skinny guy, the fat guy, the medium guy, you know, some of their old baseball games, due to the limitations on technology, they have to be kind of innovative with gameplay. And I know you talked about this with some of the recent Maddens, in that they've stopped trying to innovate the gameplay and have just focused on the graphics. Do you feel, with all the sports games out there and these next-generation consoles, that the game developers are focusing too much on graphics and animation and not trying to innovate the gameplay?
I think it just boils down to when you're selling any product. If you make something perfect, there's no reason to come back and buy it the next year. I'm not going to say no names, but I've talked to developers from a variety of companies, and it basically boils down to, all right, are we going to push graphics forward this time? Are we going to push physics forward this time? Are we going to push features forward this time? There'll be something for everybody, but there's always a primary focus. And I think when there's a primary focus, other areas tend to lack, because you literally only have so much time, so much energy, and so many man hours to put into a specific game. You know, graphics have stepped up a lot, but like you said, there are some innovations that haven't really come to the game, but I think they'll come. It's just a matter of what people say, and I'll say video games are one of the few businesses where developers and publishers actually listen to their audience. There are so many features that go into games, and so many features that aren't put into games because they listen to the communities. Like, a good example of that would be, I'm very interested to see what Microsoft and Respawn is going to do with Titanfall, because it's a great game. It's one of the bigger games, maybe the biggest game from E3 that everybody was excited about. It just dropped last week, and it's gotten great ratings across the board. It's a fun game, especially for multiplayer. It's not just a mech Call of Duty. Like, it's actually something groundbreaking and something new, but a lot of people are saying, hey, we need more modes. And if they're listening, they're going to put out more gameplay modes, more multiplayer modes soon, because they listen to communities and they want to keep the communities happy, and they want to keep these people continuing to buy DLC and buying their titles.
As a gamer and somebody who is a diehard movie lover, I'm noticing that games are becoming a lot more cinematic. You know, you have games like Drake's Revenge, even stuff like Gears of War. You feel like you're getting a full experience of not just gameplay, but you can actually sit back, pop some popcorn, and enjoy the ride. As far as the future of gaming, what are you looking for that could help aid that blend together? Do you see like the future of gaming and movie blending to the point that, I don't know, maybe you could walk into an auditorium filled with people with control sticks in their hands and they're all playing one particular game, a cinematic experience? I mean, have you ever like thought about the possibilities of how this hybrid of entertainment and what the future of it is going to bring? Any thoughts?
I mean, I think that that is definitely coming. I mean, to an extent, you already have it when you have these huge PC gaming tournaments. But as far as consoles are concerned, console gaming is concerned, I think it's coming. I mean, when you spend millions of dollars on a title, you want to give the greatest experience possible. And for a lot of hardcore gamers, these are their movies. These are movies that they can control the outcome, movies that they can be a part of. And I think we're seeing some of that also at CES with, you know, the big boom in virtual gaming with the, you know, glasses on and all of that stuff. So it's definitely coming. I think the worlds are merging. It's just as far as how far technology can take it at the end of the day.
Brandon, going back to hip-hop, and one of the conversations that we've had on our show is around hip-hop and its certain, regionalism, if you want to call it that, from the West Coast, the South, the East Coast, the Midwest, et cetera, just all of these huge regions of hip-hop. And it's funny when people say, oh, the West Coast is coming back, when I'm pretty sure lots of West Coast rap fans would say, we never left. But in comparison to, I guess, New York. You know, there's always that sort of balance between East, West, North, and South. What do you think the difference has been for the California, or I guess more so the whole West Coast hip-hop resurgence, if you will, that's enabled them to sort of find their stride again relative to what a lot of people would say is a little bit of a stagnation phase for New York hip-hop?
I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors, man. Like, at the end of the day, music success depends on how many people like it. You can come out with the best album in the world, and if nobody hears it but 100 people, it'll be deemed a failure. But it could be creatively and quality the best product that's come out the entire year. I think that music has actually become more regional. I was listening to an interview with Michael 5000 Watts not too long ago, and he was saying, whereas before it was a Texas sound, Louisiana sound, whatever, now it is a guy is hiding Baton Rouge, there's another guy who's hiding Monroe, there's another guy who's hiding Austin. It's just become more regional because you don't need record labels and big studios anymore. So there are guys out of, like you were saying, out of the West Coast, like a guy named Hundreds. Dude has his core audience. Dude has toured in Australia and all over the place, but the average fan doesn't know who the hell he is. But he makes really dope music, and the people who know, know. And even skewing a little bit older, there's a dude named Kev Choice who a lot of people know from the jazz scene because he's played with some of everybody, who dropped an album called Oakland Riviera like a month or two ago that's insane. And he's bubbling within his own audience. It's just, I think that a lot of these guys who were middling or, you know, stagnant as far as the world was concerned or as far as commercial radio or pedestrian fans are concerned have always catered to their core audience. It's just a matter of other people catching on. And when other people catch on, it's up to the artist and their team to have that mentality of retaining those users and making the project as big as it can. It comes down to business a lot of times once you already have a quality product. And I just think, you know, kind of stars are aligning. The business is right. The management is right. Radio is more open to the sound because DJ Mustard is one of the biggest producers and he's making a sound that kind of, it's something you can gravitate towards. You know, oh, that's Mustard. That's the West Coast sound. That's League of Stars. That's whatever sound. That's HBK, I Am Sue and Pilo. That's the Bay Area sound. Like, it's all kind of merging together. And then you have artists like 2 Chainz and like Wiz Khalifa and like Jeezy that are, whether it's for relevance or whether it's because they actually like it, whatever it is, they're gravitating towards the sound as well. So it's kind of just several different components coming into play to make something successful on a larger level than it would have been had it come out 2 years ago.
All right. Well, Brandon Peters, friend of the show, let all of our listeners out there know how they can find out more about what you're working on and just keep in touch with all of your comings and goings in the world of gaming, music, and cars.
The best way is probably just to check me out on social media, Brandon LSK, that's BrandenLSK on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Write a lot for Complex, write a lot for AskMen.com, about to start contributing to BBC's auto page, Rides Magazine, Slam Magazine, dude, I'm everywhere, man. So the best way to check me out is just to hit social media. I usually try to update people via that to let them know where they can find my stuff.
Well, all right. As always, thank you for coming on our show, and we look forward to having you back on sooner than later.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Much appreciated.
Over here, shaking for the man of the year, man of the bounce. Brassy girl. girls everywhere. Pretty ass hands in the air, some party over here. Shaking for the man of the year. Man of the year, man of the brow. Home of the party in the tree. Sunny lit land of the G's. Please let a nigga breathe. Tank top, top down for the breeze. Burnt lips, got a blood full of weed. Peace, love in the knees. Nigga, I ain't come for the beef. You ain't no sheep. Came for the speech. Got pipe for the cheeks. Nigga, I'm the life for the beat. Fuck that, this year gotta eat. Bounce for the crown. You be hating and I still hold it down. When you round, man, the girls never lounge. Man, I heard you a hound. Bruh, man, that bitch need a bounce. Tip, 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 bounce out of gown. Hands tied to the sound. Yeah, I'm the rich nigga now. Bitch, I'm the talk of the town. Make a bitch run a mouth. Yeah, go south for the boy. Pop, pop, pop down to the floor. Bounce, bounce.
Welcome back to the show. And as usual, you know how we do here on the Section 357 show. Last call for alcohol or something like it. L.A. Trey out there on the left coast. What do you have?
We were talking earlier about video games becoming a lot more cinematic. And right now, we're officially in the golden age of television right now. And I wanted to bring up a couple of games that kind of coincide with the golden age of television and our video games at the same time. Check out The Walking Dead. It's a really good game. A little bit more turn-based if you're not somebody that's real big. On using the sticks and or button mashers. There's another one, there's an old one, Scarface, which is actually based on the movie. But also Game of Thrones has a game that's about to come out as well. We talked about it briefly about the worlds colliding, and if you want to get a pretty good example of how that's unfolding, check out those three games.
Just want to give a shout-out to all the gamers out there. It's funny, I was talking to a coworker just the other day. The most recent gaming console that I currently have at my house is the very first generation Xbox. So it's great to see the gaming going on. You know, I remember the PS1, the PS2 days. I remember the Super NES days. I remember all the battles we used to have, you know, back in the day with the old school Maddens, with some of the old school fighting games. It's just great to see those traditions go on. And if you're growing up in this age now, enjoy it and just know that there's always going to be more and better to come.
D, speaking of the old school, my last call goes out to some of the video game legends, Ben Coates, Bo Jackson, Vince Carter, Michael Irvin on Madden 93. You know, some of our favorite guys from real sports who on the video game, absolute monster. Some of those legends. We might have to have a video game Hall of Fame on the show one day. Check out for that. Check for that, lady, in a future episode. Floyd.
As usual, my last call always goes out to the fans out there. We thank you sincerely for checking out our show and for passing the word. Find us on Twitter at Section 357. Find us also, the podcast that is, on iTunes, Podomatic, and Stitcher, where you can subscribe to and download the show. With that being said, good luck to you and your favorite teams out there, real and on the video game consoles. This has been the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house. Until next time, take care.